I'd like to call this meeting into order. Today, we're having a culture committee meeting here at the Osage Nation Capitol Building at 100 West Main in Pawhuska, Oklahoma. Today, this meeting is scheduled from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. And the next thing is roll call.
Congresswoman Dickoff?
Present.
Congressman Superbowl?
Here.
Congressman Norris? Speaker Pratt?
Up here.
Congressman Tillman?
Here.
Congressman Baker?
Here. Okay, we do have a quorum, and next thing on the agenda is prayer, and Congressman Tillman is going to give us a prayer today.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Dear Heavenly Father, as we gather here today this afternoon, we just come and bow our heads and say thank you for the many blessings and the grace that you bestow upon us each and every day. Watch over the Osage Nation as we come before you and make decisions regarding children, regarding business, regarding elders, regarding our tribe. Give us that guidance that we all need and seek. Give us the strength, give us the knowledge, give us kind hearts. Thank you, Father, for our servicemen and women, wherever they may be. We just thank you for what they bring to us in protection and service. And again, we thank you for your mercy. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Congressman Tillman.
Yes, sir.
That's beautiful. Okay, next thing is approval of minutes, so please, committee, take a look at the minutes. If you see anything left out or anything that needs to be changed.
May I join you?
You may. For the record, we have Congresswoman Whitehorn who just joined us here at the table.
This has got speakers now on it. It's okay, Dana. There's just one.
Just one page. One
page.
Motion to approve minutes. A second. Any discussion? Seeing none. All in favor? Say yes.
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 All opposed? Say nay. Motion carries. Motion carries. Thank you. Okay, today's legislation we're going to be discussing is something we've been talking about for a long time, almost a year and a half. We've had a lot of input, a lot of discussion. We've had federal law discussed, state law, Oklahoma and California. We have the TLPI, that's Tribal Law Policy Institute. We have the Chief Justice and Attorney General Holly Wells and our Child Protection Director Lee Collins have all had input on this through the years. So right now we're going to turn this over to Congresswoman Edwards, who's the sponsor of this bill, ONCA 17-120.
Thank you. As promised, I've made a couple of connections, and on the phone with us now is Judge Eric Maynard, and he's a good friend of mine and an excellent tribal chief justice, and I asked him, or chief judge, and I asked him to, I sent him a copy of the bill and asked him to give some an overview to us about how customary adoptions work in his court and in his tribe, the Penobscot Nation. Before we do that, I have three amendments that are coming at the after discussion with Ms. Collins. Want me to make those now, or let him give his overview and then make those?
Let's just hear him first while he's on the line.
Hi, Judge Maynard. How are you today?
I am well. How is everyone there?
Tell us what's going on in Maine. Is there snow, ice, 70 degrees?
No, we don't get 70 degrees for a while. We're still waiting for ice out on our lake, but we're getting there. It's about 40 today. Started at 30 and with a wind chill down in the mid-20s. So we're better than we were. Last week we were down in the low single digits.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Not going to complain anytime the weather starts to warm up.
It's beautiful there in summer, so we know that. Okay, so we have before us a bill that was the groundwork for this has been done probably over the course of a little over a year, maybe a little more. There were several drafts circulated, input received from a lot of different sources. What I like to call the pre-legislation phase, and we got to the point of getting it introduced. Lots of kudos to my fellow member here, Congresswoman Goodfox, who did a lot of the groundwork on it.
No,
I thought you did.
This is all Amanda Proctor's work. That's not mine.
Okay.
Sorry. Order, please. Let's listen to you.
Okay.
I didn't do any of the work on this legislation. I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you for that. Carry on, please.
So, take that back. And so, I guess an attorney that's a member of our tribe worked on it. And then it went through, it's been through some other views, and it's got to this point. I don't have a dog in the fight, so to speak. I haven't done much in the way of any drafting on it. I did make some changes before I filed it, and I've got a few changes, as I indicated, after talking to Lee Collins, who's here, and she's our social services director. But we want to get an overview from you based on your experience, and then also looking at this bill that I sent you to see if you have any input. So if I don't need to have any more introduction, then I can turn it over to you, and actually would you give us just your background, and so everybody knows who you are. Because right now you're this little voice coming out of a round black box.
Okay.
And talk loud, please, because we're in a really big room.
All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for inviting me to offer some thoughts. I'm honored to do so. I am the Chief Judge of the Penobscot Nation Tribal Court. I've been honored to be able to serve here for the last 10 years as Chief Judge. We are a court of general jurisdiction, meaning that we, the nation, has criminal and civil jurisdiction concurrent with the state on just about every issue. We don't exercise A and B felony levels. Those are the one area that we do not have concurrent jurisdiction with the state on, which are murder and major crimes that usually are governed by the feds under the Major Crimes Act. So we do a lot of family law work here. Prior to my experience with the nation, I had been a civil rights attorney for about 25 years, and dealing primarily with federal civil rights issues. The family law code, when we look at family law, issue for everyone is child protective and what's in the best interest of the child. And so I guess I'll go right into that. The family law code in Penobscot is a code that not only contains customary adoption, but also contains all of the provisions for child protective proceedings that run through any kind of child protective that you might have. And that really is my first question as far as the code is concerned. Is that similar to the code that OSAGE uses? Do you have a complete Child Protective Code that this is being attached to or part of?
We have a section on adoptions in our code. We do have some other parts of the code.
Okay, because typically in the proceedings that we have done here at Penobscot, we have Child Protective, which is when is a child safe in jeopardy and how do social services intervene when a child's in jeopardy. And then once that determination has been made, then we start talking about what do we do for permanency placement. And permanency placement can be any number of different things. It can be customary adoption. It can be a permanent guardianship. It can be long-term placement in foster care, although that is not preferred anywhere. The other question about it is child protective proceedings among the states are governed by Title 4E. And Title 4E makes certain requirements, and that's the area to which the Indian Child Welfare Act applies. And so as I was looking at the Osage Code, one of the questions that came up is I looked at the provision as to when you would do a customary adoption, and it talked about the suspension of parental rights. And I wasn't certain whether your current code carried a provision for suspension of parental rights or when were you looking at how those parental rights are going to be suspended. I could see the customary adoption provision coming in if you were looking at it and going, okay, there's a state court proceeding, there is a Title 40 proceeding going on in the state court where they're looking to take the child away from their parent. And I actually saw a great provision that you guys have drafted which says that you're going to try and the Attorney General's office, the Osage, is going to intervene and seek a continuance of those proceedings. I think you want to seek a stay rather than a continuance of those proceedings, only because of what the legal ramifications of that are. But what I didn't know is was a customary adoption proceeding designed to deal with that issue, or was there another issue within the Osage Nation to deal with as far as what you want to accomplish with a customary adoption? Your customary adoption code is very, very close to what the Penobscot Nation has adopted. I think you've done a phenomenal job with the definition section about within your code. What I'm a little bit confused about is the mechanism that you're using to take away the rights of the parents. How do you get to the suspension of the rights of the parents? That's where I'm a little bit confused, and I'm not sure whether there's an assumption that that's already occurred somewhere else, or whether that's going to be part of the customary adoption procedure. If you were looking at a lot of codes that when they look at going to suspend parental rights, they'll look at specifically saying, for instance, we have four conditions that we look at. One is that parental rights have been terminated or suspended by a prior court order, that parents' parental rights and responsibilities have not been terminated, consent to the adoption, and the court finds that the adoption is in the best interest of the child, or three, that the parents do not consent, the court finds by clear and convincing evidence that persons have failed to respond to the proper notice or a living situation has been created that is at least temporarily intolerable for the child, even though that living situation does not rise to the level of jeopardy required for the final termination of parental rights, and that the proposed guardian will provide a living situation that is in the best interest of the child. Those are what we look at as we look at it. Saying, okay, are we going to move forward with a suspension of parental rights? are certain parameters that we use in looking at the suspension parental rights. The Penobscot Nation does not favor termination, as most tribal courts and First Nations do not. And so, other than that, I have seen, and prior to the adoption, the Penobscot Nation adopted its code about 3 years ago. Prior to that, the customary adoption here was that the parents would come in and simply sign a paragraph form that said that they were allowing a family member to adopt the child. The court would review that, and then we considered that a customary, and the court would sign off that it's in the best interest of the child, and that would be a customary adoption, at which the parents could withdraw at any point in time. They could come in and withdraw their consent at any point in time for the customary adoption. That is not the procedure under Penobscot law now. It doesn't appear to be the procedure under the law that you drafted. I am happy to answer any questions. I'm not sure if I've gone in the right direction or I've misinterpreted something, or if there's some specific questions that I can answer, I'd be happy to do so.
I guess my question would be, those conditions are part of your code. Are they part of your code, or are they part of another part of your code?
They're part of the child protective proceedings.
Okay, all right. So then we need to look at our child protective proceedings and make sure that they... So what you're saying is, with respect to the customary adoption, this language, it needs to be... We need to make clear at what point in the proceedings this procedure can be implemented.
Right. As I'm looking at it, Section 6A2, you talk about that statement as to why an order for suspension of parental rights is intended in the best interest of the child. And I don't know what the provisions are underlying what that order for suspension would be. And you say it's going to be in the best interest of the child and the best interest of the nation. And so I go back and I see that there's a definition for the suspension of there is a definition for what's in the best interest of the child and the best interest of the nation. But I don't know what there is, and I may have missed it, but I'll check it again, that says what the reason that you're suspending the parents' rights in it. And it strikes me that really needs to be two separate proceedings. At first, you have a suspension hearing saying the parents' rights are being suspended, and then from there, you go to, now we're going to allow an adoption. When you look at most child protective proceedings, you go first into jeopardy. Parents have done something that has caused the child to be placed at risk. And once the court makes that finding, there's a secondary hearing, which is called a dispositional hearing, which is, okay, now what are we going to arrange for a placement for the child? What is going to be the final placement? Is it going to be a rehabilitation reunification with the parents, and what do the parents need to do for that? Is it going to be a permanency guardian? Is it going to be a termination of parental rights with an adoption? Those are the, so it's a really two-phase process. And here, it looks to me, and I could be wrong, but it looks to me like what you're saying is that in the customary adoption proceeding, it's a one-phase process where you're saying they file a petition for a customary adoption, and then they have to make an order as to why the suspension of parental rights, there should be suspension of parental rights, and why that is in the best interest of the child and the best interest of the Osage Nation. And I guess just from a legal point of view, one of the questions I had was, that from an ex-litigator's point of view, anytime you give me two best interests that are competing best interests, that's that point where there can be an argument, where you have the possibility of an argument saying, well, you may say it's in the best interest of the nation, but it's not in the best interest of the child, these reasons.
Yeah, that was actually, that was one of my that was one of my things that I was considering striking, was striking the best interests of the nation and just leaving it to the best interest of the child.
See, I think the best, for me, it would strike me that the best interests of the nation are in the best interest of the child, and that they're one and the same.
Okay. So... So I could strike I could strike the definition of best interest of the nation and leave the best interest of the child.
Yep.
Okay. That's what I was planning on actually doing. How does your nation carry out responsibilities that might be associated with customary adoption, like home visits and things like that?
When we're looking at the preliminary for the adoption, that all goes through the Department of Social Services. They have to make a report on a customary, on any kind of adoption, a regular adoption or a customary adoption. They have to make the reports.
And have you run afoul at all of? Do you have federal funding for your social services department?
It is. The problem with the federal funding is, the BIA funding for social services is so small that it really uses up all their resources. We've done two adoptions this year, and actually neither was customary. They were both formal adoptions under a probate code. And in that case, they had to do a home study. The home study was perfunctory because the individual was older, and the other one they had to do a full home study on. The way to, and again, I don't know enough about what your social services is, the Department of Health and Human Services is allowing nations to go Title IV direct, which is that the child protective services can be directly funded by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And it's pain in the neck because there are some reporting requirements that are problematic. But on the flip side, there is a 20%, as I understand, a 20% administrative lift. So that when they're doing the services, if the child qualifies for Title IV, for low-income child, a child in a low-income family, if they qualify for the services under Title IV, then you get the services that are provided to the child. You get, for instance, the foster care and some of those things. In addition, you get a 20% administrative lift for the administrative function that the nation's social services has to do for it to be compliant with that.
So your tribe did?
Not that nation. It's just going for you direct. We have been following the Title IV here for the entire time that I've been here, but we're just now going Title IV direct. I think this year we just got the okay to go IV direct, not maybe 2 months ago, 3 months ago. But there are certain, what we do is we use a form, there are certain form orders that you use, and you go through and you, Title IV requires that you remove a child out of the process immediately. Remove a child without hearing, you immediately have a hearing within 10 days, semi-preliminary hearing. Then you have to have a case management conference within 60 days. Then within 90 days, you have to have a jeopardy hearing. And then within 120 days, you have to have a dispositional hearing. It's designed to ensure that social services are trying to place a child back in the family and things are moving along, not just when the family separate, which is a good perspective, and it is a lot of the provisions mirror the court provisions that the state has to follow as part of the return of the guardians of the child. Now, customary adoption really is one of those dispositional, as I said, it's one of those dispositional conference. Dispositional hearing type arrangements. What are you going to do with a dispositional hearing? And that's where I'm a little bit confused, because as I look at the fact that you said the laws that you're having, you're talking on under Section 6A12, all of those things that you just raised, which are the facts that bring the child into the jurisdiction of the court and the description of the previous court proceedings involving the care and custody of the child to be adopted. Those are all part and parcel that's required of it. The court order in the customary adoption, and it seems to assume to me that the customary adoption is out of the out of a proceeding, child protective proceeding, where there's been a suspension of parental rights rather than as a standalone proceeding.
Well, I mean, we've talked some about that, and I think that it could be a voluntary proceeding as well as that kind of proceeding. So maybe we need to make that clear. But let me ask you one more time. So you guys don't have a separate department that just handles customary adoption?
No, we do not.
$400,000 department. You're handling it through your social services department?
Handled through social services.
Okay.
Yes, Councilwoman Goodfoss.
Did you say that the what is deemed traditional tribal practice? So in our definitions, we have customary adoption, which reads, means a traditional tribal practice recognized by the community and nation. I would like to say that, or maybe, but. Which gives a child a permanent parent-child relationship with someone other than the child's birth parents. So when Congresswoman Edwards had thought that I had written this legislation, and when we started the meeting, and I wanted to be very clear that I did not, I took a piece of draft legislation that was written by Amanda Proctor, who's an Osage tribal member and an attorney, and had gone to the judicial court just to get feedback on what had been presented. Our justice had looked through it because it was a couple of meetings for a couple of hours, and she thought that it was a really good piece of legislation, but she would have kind of taken it literally all the way down to the, what do you call that? She kind of really said, this will not work for us. And I don't know if that's, it doesn't appear. The one I had was really lengthy. This is not. So I don't, it must not be the same piece of legislation. But at any rate, the most valuable feedback that I got from the judicial branch of government at that time was that she absolutely, positively, in no way, shape, or form, wanted the judicial branch of government to be involved in what determined what customary adoption meant. So I don't know how things work on the East Coast, but here with our tribe, we do things very differently from family to family and district to district, i.e., when someone receives their Osage name, families do it very differently. Some families go in and have a breakfast and are name their children at sunrise. Some do it at noon. Some only go into the Native American church. Those that go into the Native American church may go in the morning. Some families believe if you don't go in all night, you know, that's that they want to go in all night and then name in the morning. That's just how their family does things. So there is no right or wrong way, but I'm just saying it varies from district to district and family to family. And the judicial branch, and I'm just using naming as an example. There's lots of other things that we do differently. The judicial branch did not want to be involved in trying to deem what is cultural for everyone. I don't know if that's a question or... Did you say that the social services department is the one who deemed what was a cultural, customary activity?
No.
Oh.
No. No, who
does that for you all?
They do, they'll do a home study. Like your legislation requires that a home study be done, that there's a pre-adoption assessment, that there's a counseling affidavit. all of those things are required for there can be an adoption. And that, I guess that's what is a little bit confusing, because for, I agree with you entirely, Congresswoman, that when you start talking custom and tradition, that varies by family, and up here it varies by clan. And so as to what that is or isn't is really up to the family or clan. When you're talking about the statute that is outlining what is going to be called the customary adoption and what has to be proven in order to be for an adoption to be, and it seems to be as an attempt to codify or stratify the provisions under which you're going to allow an adoption to occur and call it customary adoption. So that's what I'm not sure if that's answering your question or not, but that's what I'm seeing in this way that the legislation that you've got is written.
So it's up to the family or the clan of the family or some cultural unit of the family to present evidence on why they should be allowed to have a customary adoption?
Right.
Okay.
What you've got is that you're allowed, your statute's allowing any petition to come in, but it's saying that the court has to make the determination as to what's in the best interest of the child. I think this goes to the Congresswoman's point, is that it's very, very hard for the court to determine that if you're talking about what is the custom, if it's going to be a customary adoption. That's always been my challenge when I look at the customary adoption statute. I frankly thought that the way that the nation used to do it before the Penobscot Nation used to do it before, made a great deal of sense to me, which was that if the parents came in and said, we want another family member to take care of our child, and we're prepared to sign the paperwork turning that child over to allow them to be adopted, quote, adopted by the child, allow the child to be adopted by them, that made a whole lot of sense to me. And the court's only role in that was to say, okay, I just want to make sure that everything, that this is going to be a good living situation for the child and in the best interest of the child, but a very limited role in that customary adoption. Customary adoption that the Penobscot now use, and it's very similar to the statute that has been proposed for Osage, is a lot more formal adoption proceeding and a lot closer to a formalized Anglo-style adoption proceeding.
But in the adoption code that you have, do you allow for the family do you allow for the child to be adopted without a termination of parental rights?
Yes, we have a suspension proceeding before that. So we can allow for a child to, we actually call it, we have both regular adoption and a customary adoption.
And the customary adoption proceeding is the one that allows the suspension, or both of them?
Right. It allows the suspension. I mean, we're calling it a modification order.
We have a question here. Congressman Supernaw has a question, please.
Oh, excuse me, Mr.
Judge.
Maynard, have you got a copy of this code there? With you? You do?
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yep, I can.
Do you have a copy of that code?
Yes, he does. He said yes.
All right, she said yes. I didn't hear him. All right, in section 7-103, the way, now my understanding is it's only supposed to be Osages that we can adopt under this code. But this says, the way I read it, it says any unmarried 18-year-old whose case has been transferred to the juvenile division of the trial court would be under the jurisdiction of this code. Would that ever happen, that a case of a non-Osage would be transferred to our trial court?
Cuggy, where are you at? I don't.
In the current
law. He doesn't have our adoption law.
Yeah, he does. The current, it's already enacted. This is what we currently have.
This judge right here doesn't have a copy of our adoption law.
Maybe I can. What do you think, Lee?
We see here, one of the things that we see up here in the Penobscot is that the Penobscot is a blood quantum nation, and so a child does not have the requisite blood quantum as far as being a Penobscot on Penobscot census. This court would still take jurisdiction over them if they are on reserve for purposes of adoption.
Well, this says under our adoption code that you have to be an Osage member or eligible for enrollment in the Osage Nation, and the biological child of an Osage member or whose case is transferred from the courts of a state which has assumed jurisdiction over the child.
But it doesn't say that. It says, or whose case,
right.
An 18-year-old whose case has been transferred.
Right. That's what it says.
Huh?
Yep, that's what our code says.
Well, should we amend that to say an Osage whose case has been transferred?
Well, that's probably for another day and another person to work on this code, but this code is not this code.
Oh.
But we might be able to.
You have a question here from Mrs. Collins, who's here. She's the director of our Child Protection Department. Mr. Maynard?
Judge Maynard.
Judge Maynard, excuse me, sir.
Judge Maynard, I am the director of social services, and that includes every aspect of child welfare that the nation has, and we have it all. I have a question, and it is, under your customary adoption law, your adoptive parents, once they've adopted or during the adoption, do they receive Title IV-E benefits such as attorney fees, and then after the decree is granted, do they receive the monthly stipend like in an ICWA case, a state case, and the Medicaid?
They should, but that has not been something that I have been intimately involved in. I have argued for it. I've actually gone to, that was part of the reason that Drive went to 4E Direct. We'll see what happens directly with that. So we actually were trying to get an agreement with the state for Title IV-E pass-through money to ensure that that would happen. It strikes me that given that there's just a suspension of parental rights, that rather than a termination of parental rights, that the Title IV-E money ought to be available for them.
It is available. I just wondered if Penobscot already had that in place, and it sounds like you don't.
No, we don't specifically have it in place, to my knowledge. Now, the social services may be doing it, and I just don't know it. Not in the statute.
Thank you.
Lee, didn't you have some more questions? You were asking me some questions that I really couldn't answer the other day, and I thought maybe Judge Maynard might have some.
I had a couple more quick comments.
Okay.
For take them for what they're worth. When I look at section 7B.
7 what?
7B.
7B.
Okay.
It's talking about that the person or agency should be at the hearing. They shall be present at the hearing. They have the right to appear. It's been waived in writing before notary. Filed with the court, or unless the person or agency is unable to attend by reason of condition, as evidenced by license statement, by written statement from a physician or other appropriate professional. And then your paragraph C talks about that the physician petitioner, the person who brings the petition for customary adoption, have to appear, and if they fail to appear, that's grounds for dismissal of the petition. What I'm unclear about is what happens, say you serve a parent, and as you're required to do under your statute, and they don't show up.
The parent wouldn't be the petitioner.
The adoptive parent would be the petitioner, but
right.
The natural parent would not be the petitioner.
Right.
And I believe under your statute that they have to serve as well.
I don't believe the absence of the biological parents would be grounds for dismissal the way this is written, is it?
No, it's not grounds for dismissal, but it is grounds for default. That is, if they don't show up, can the judge then go, okay, they didn't show up, so I'm going to grant a default against them. Because the way that I read the statute right now, it says the person shall be present. And it doesn't say what happens if they're not present.
Okay.
Can I address that?
Go ahead.
Judge, the way it happens in our other cases, not under this code, if the parent doesn't show up at that time, the judge will usually set one or two additional hearings, making sure they get good service or that they they terminate by publication. And once the judge is certain that the parent is not going to show up, they will terminate by default and proceed into the next step, which is typically an adoption.
Yep, and that makes perfect sense to me. I think that's absolutely how it should happen. My only concern was there was a requirement in the statute written in paragraph B that says they shall be present. And I guess maybe I'm thinking, overthinking it, and that's certainly possible. I certainly can do that. But when you say they shall be present, then the question is, what if they're not present? And that can be, I agree that should be a default. I'm just not certain whether or not that statute mandates to the court that they have to have that person present.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll fix that.
The next one is under 7I. Talks about the nation shall make every effort to continue any hearings pending in other jurisdictions for pursuing tribal customary adoption under this act. The problem with a continuance is that it continues to allow that court to think that it's going forward. I would argue that you would want them to make every effort to seek a stay of any hearings pending in other jurisdictions so that you could pursue the tribal customary adoption.
Okay.
Because a stay means that they're not proceeding forward. I assume that what that's talking about is child protection. State court proceedings, and you want those proceedings stayed for the customary adoption to proceed, and then the state court proceedings become moot if the customary adoption is done, the state court proceedings become non-essential.
Okay, good, thank you.
And that really was it. I really thought it was very well written. I don't have any other comments with regard to it. The only other thing that I know that the Penobscot Nation has done, and then as I was reading through the statute, what was striking me was I thought that one of the things that the Osage Nation may have been thinking about was saying, we want to make sure that Osage children, we take every opportunity we have to bring Osage children back to the Osage Nation and extend our jurisdiction over them, which is really the fundamentals of ICWA and the Mississippi Band of Choctaw versus Holyoke. And I don't know whether you've got it or not, but one of the things that I found very, very helpful in the Penobscot Code is that under the Penobscot Code, anyone who is on the Penobscot Nation Tribal Census is considered domiciled in the Penobscot Nation. They may reside in other places, but they are domiciled on the nation. And that's really important for ICWA purposes, because domicile is key to exercising jurisdiction. The danger of that is that under Mississippi Band of Choctaw, if you do that, you may have to be held to claim exclusive jurisdiction over all child protective cases that involve an Osage child. And that may be something that the nation does not wish to do. I have found that that provision in the Penobscot Nation Code has allowed me, when I have a ICWA battle with a state court judge, to be able to pull the case back to the nation and exercise jurisdiction.
Judge, this is Maria Whitehorn, so I have a question about that. So, the difference in, is the way that you are able to claim domicile is because that's where their tribal membership is planted? Because I've heard you said they could also live outside of the reserve area too. So is that the
right
basis of domicile? It would be their tribal membership, correct?
It's exactly correct. It is.
Okay. Thank you.
By claiming tribal membership, they are claiming domicile on the Penobscot Reserve.
Okay. I understand that. Thank you.
Your Honor, did you have to work with your state there, I guess the state of Maine, to change any of the children's code to allow for the stay in a state case so that a customary adoption could occur in your tribal case simultaneously, and then, as you said, that state case would close once your customary adoption is completed?
We tend to do that on a case-by-case basis rather than, and I'd love to see it with a memorandum of understanding, some kind of greater agreement. But what has happened here in the past, whenever we've had a challenge about jurisdiction and about whether this court's going to exercise jurisdiction or the state court's going to exercise jurisdiction, I've gotten on the phone, phenomenal clerk. She gets on the phone, calls up the clerk of the other court, and says, two judges have been caught. And we need to get this straightened out. And we get, which is authorized under the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act, for judges in different jurisdictions to talk about who's going to exercise which jurisdiction and why.
So you're talking about a transfer of the case, a complete transfer to take the state
for
out.
TCJA, that's absolutely right.
Which is different.
But we have also done that where we've gone, okay, you've got a problem. You stay here proceeding until we move forward and figure out what we've got here. And in one case, they asked that we stay the tribal court proceedings and until they could have a conference. And at that conference, they then agreed to move everything over to tribal court. So we've done those kind of things, but I have not had any kind of formalized agreement with the state. No, that's not a question.
Okay. Judge Maynard, we really appreciate your time. I mean, I thought that was very informative. It was helpful. I've taken notes. I will probably be calling you back again, working on some amendments based on our conversations today. But I really want to thank you for your time. I know you are a busy person, and I appreciate you talking to us.
No, I appreciate the conversation. It always helps me think things through, and I learn some things too, which is I probably should have formalized a random question. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay, we have one more person.
Please ensure that the microphone speaker and dialer.
We have another person, Delia Sharp.
Thank you.
She's from California.
She ready?
Yeah, she's ready. So you want me to?
We need the process out of this because there's information that I gathered from this that's going to be very valuable to all of you as you make your decisions.
Okay. We just have 35 more minutes in this meeting, so. Committee, how do you want to act?
We need to call her.
Okay, well, call her.
Well, you're calling her.
Okay.
Question.
The tribe he was referring to, Penobscot, I don't even know how to spell it or say it.
I do.
But they run theirs through their social services.
That's what he said. That's a risk. That's a high risk. And their program is not as highly sophisticated as the tribes in California. You know, from all the studying and consultation I have had, what he's describing is pretty different.
And so the cost associated with setting up a separate program, as you were referring to in your email for our department and customary adoptions, would be, you still feel that price of $350,000 to $400,000?
I got that from the Honorable Anita Findlay from White Earth Ojibwe.
Mm-hmm.
And they were one of the first to set this up. They probably did it from California. That was what it cost
so
them.
You don't feel comfortable.
Got two conversations going on at the same time. Hold on, just one second.
No,
it would have to be set.
Yes.
In your opinion.
It would definitely.
Okay.
That's all. That's all.
This is Delia Sharp. She's from California, and I'll let her introduce herself. I reached out to Judge Abby Abinanti of the Yurok Tribe. The Yurok Tribe is the largest tribe in California. And I said, who is the person in California to talk to about customary adoptions? And she gave me your name and number. So, and I know that we've been back and forth, and I apologize for the other day when we had something scheduled and it didn't happen. But so today we have our committee here that's looking at a bill on customary adoptions. My email was bouncing last week, and apparently something I sent to you, this bill bounced, but our committee secretary is sending it to you, so I understand you won't have the benefit of having looked at the bill and talked to us about specifics. We, in fact, just spoke to Judge Eric Maynard, Chief Judge of Penobscot Nation, and he gave us some good insights into how their customary adoption law works in their tribe. So if you could, please, just give us your background and tell us who you are, and then talk to us about customary tribal adoptions as they relate to your experience in California.
Okay, sure. So my name is Delia Sharp. I was an attorney with California Indian Legal Services for, 11 years or so, and then I worked at UC Davis doing the statewide training program here for child welfare and probation. And most recently, I've taken on the role as executive director of the California Tribal Families Coalition, which is a statewide membership organization. Federally recognized tribes here are our members, and it's a successor organization to the California ICWA Compliance Task Force. It was convened at the request of our state attorney general's office a couple of years ago, and we submitted a report. So I've been doing ICWA work within California for a while. Worked with a group who put forward the tribal customary adoption law here. It's built into our state welfare institutions code. So here, when children are in the state child welfare system, tribal customary adoption is one of the permanency options that is available to them. So it's right at the same level as a standard adoption that requires, under state law, a termination of parental rights. So now, as you know, children go through the system, where tribes had for a long time opted for legal guardianship instead of an adoption, because as you all probably know, this is a version to the termination of parental rights, and now there's another option of tribal customary adoption, which has the benefit of allowing the adoption assistance payments, which are more flexible than foster care funding, to flow, and also provides that heightened level of permanency that, of course, all of our systems are always looking towards. Here in California, that legislation was sponsored by the Saboba Band of Mission Indians in Southern California, so it was actually brought by tribes and not by the state. Although it was negotiated with the state very closely. The way that it works here is that starting at The disposition hearing. So in California, we have kind of a continuum of hearings versus like two-step proceedings, right? So we don't have kind of a reunification phase and then a permanency phase. We have a detention hearing that happens within 48 hours of removal, and then a jurisdictional hearing that happens within a couple of weeks, and then a dispositional hearing that happens within 10 days after the jurisdictional hearing. So usually, about a month and a half into a case, there's a dispositional hearing. And at that hearing, that county social workers have to be documenting in their report whether the tribe signs that tribal customary adoption would be an appropriate concurrent plan for the child if reunification services were to fail. And so, in line with federal regulations, tribal customary adoption has to be considered as that concurrent plan from really, really early on in the case, which is one of the areas where we have seen some pushback by tribes that have worked with, you know, this new permanency option that weren't super familiar with it, because the way that it unfolded was, and here in California, at our dispositional hearing, is when you're developing your active efforts case plan, right? So you have a meeting and everybody is sort of enthusiastic about developing a case plan that's going to lead to reunification, and people work really hard, and then all of a sudden there's this pivot to, and if reunification fails, then of course we're looking at tribal customary adoption, right? So really having to sort of manage the messaging around that, just because it requires communication as a part of concurrent planning, where typically at that stage, counties were not engaging with tribes. That was one of the barriers that we've had to overcome. But overall, what we have found that I think might be helpful for you is making sure that the tribal customary adoption order itself has some general parameters built into it. You know, that it needs to be specific enough, of course, to maintain that relationship between the child and the child's tribe and the child's extended family, but also broad enough to grant the child as any adoption order, right? So that was another one of the barriers here in California. But that's sort of the gist of it. But it, in order to be, you know, really reflective of what you're doing, I would be happy to respond to questions.
One of the questions, and I don't know how California addresses this, but when you go through the tribal customary adoption process, are you utilizing the social services department or resources of the tribe, or do you know?
So they're county cases, and so the county works very closely with the tribe, but it's not until tribal customary adoption is actually ordered at the permanency plan hearing that the tribe's responsibilities kick in. So it's, here in California, it's a 366.26 hearing. Can anybody know this from working out here? But so at that permanency plan hearing, the state court does would order tribal customary adoption as the permanent plan, and then continue the case for a period of up to 120 days. And then that gives the tribe an opportunity to go back and develop the tribal customary adoption order, and then also either conduct the home study on, you know, through the tribal staff, or to designate the county to do that.
Okay, so the tribe is able to use the county's resources for doing home studies and things like that?
Yes, absolutely. And one of the reasons that that was important here is that there's actually federal funding that flows for that. It's about $10,000, it's $10,000 per home study. That money cannot, under current state law, flow to tribes. So it makes sure that resources continue to attach to those cases. And we're working on the legislation to free up that money so that tribes can do home studies and actually have access to it. But right now, only state licensed adoption agencies have access to that funding.
And we've had a recommendation because I think we have in this law, which I apologize hasn't gotten to you, that the court can continue the case. We had a recommendation from Judge Maynard out of Penobscot that the case be stayed pending state or tribal court proceedings. Have you run into any issues with that? I mean, is just terminology, it seems like to me.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about the continuance is that it kind of operates as a stay, but it's not a true state, meaning that if an issue around visitation were to come up, or we needed an order for education or something like that, that the case wasn't truly stayed, because you're not transferring jurisdiction of the case necessarily. You're just transferring, you know, a small component of the case, right? The development of the order, the adoption order and the home study. And so everything else that's going on in that child's life continues to go on. And so you still need, or at least we found here in California, you still need an ongoing mechanism to address issues as they come up.
I have a question.
Congresswoman Good Fox.
I know, it's real hard for him for some reason.
We have a name change.
Out of all the tribes in California, how many of those tribes have a law like this?
So in California, there are only 3 tribes that have Title 40 agreements. And so we don't have a lot of tribes that are actively exercising jurisdiction over child welfare. Instead, a lot of the cases continue to be in the state court system. And tribes do not need to have a law in order to utilize tribal customary adoption as a state law, right? So the Yurok tribe, because they're a Title 40 tribe, does have their own version of customary adoption built into their code if that child were actually under the jurisdiction of the tribal court. But if that child were, instead of being under the jurisdiction of the tribal court, were still under the jurisdiction of the state court, right, so case is being called in the county, the tribe can say that tribal customary adoption is the most appropriate permanent plan, and it would still be the tribal court that determines the contents of the tribal customary adoption order, but that would not happen pursuant to tribal law. And the tribe doesn't actually need to have a tribal court or a tribal code at all. We have a lot of very small tribes here in California, and often it's the tribal council who will actually develop the order. Does that make sense at all, or do you want me to explain that again? I feel like I did a poor job of articulating that.
Well, I just had a follow-up question. So minus those small tribes that you mentioned that don't have a judicial or, and they just run through their tribal council to do things, why is it, in your opinion, do you think that there aren't more tribes that are going this route?
That are developing tribal customary adoption as an independent code internally, within the tribal system?
Yes. Because California has a lot of tribes.
California has 109 federally recognized tribes, but we have very limited funding for tribal judicial systems because we're a public law 280 state. While tribes in Southern California tend to have, you know, pretty solid economic development, that's not necessarily true for the rest of the state, and so it's largely a resource issue, that tribal infrastructure piece. And so without, you know, in order to take on child welfare cases, a tribe has to have, you know, minimally a tribal court, but also a very developed social services system, and ideally tribal law enforcement or, you know, some agreement with the county. So many tribes just aren't there yet. But the other piece is that, you know, the county system, not that it's an adequate system, but you know, because there are things like tribal customary adoption built into the county system, kids are still able to utilize tribal customary adoption. There was an appellate case that came out of Northern California in 2012. Henry H.R., Shannon, I can pull it up and send it to you, but what it says is that tribal customary adoption is the most appropriate permanent plan for Native American children in California. And that's through the state court system. And again, tribes do not need to have, in order to utilize our state tribal customary adoption as a permanent plan, any tribal codes or tribal laws at all. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Any more questions?
Just to be clear, we are huge proponents of development of tribal courts and tribes taking on child welfare and are working on doing more tribal Title 4E development. It's just a process here in California.
Well, 4E is actually a process all over the country, is it not? I mean, I know that, I guess our tribe hasn't developed 4E. We don't have 4E here. Now, we talked to Penobscot today. They have just gotten 4E. Who's got 4E in California? Klamath, maybe?
Yeah, the Yurok tribe has an agreement with the state. I don't think that they've actually started taking cases into tribal court, but they're pretty far along in the process. They have a negotiated state agreement and all of the federally approved codes. Karuk is in the same position.
Uh-huh.
And Talawa Dumi has an agreement utilizing the direct approach.
Okay. And so this is kind of cutting edge, moving forward, hey, we realize these are our rights and we should take hold of them kind of thing, I think. At least that's my impression.
Absolutely. You know, of course, it's exercise of true tribal sovereignty and being able to, manage child welfare cases is critical in doing that.
Okay. Is it a state law that allows the tribe to present their tribal customary adoption order, or is it just an agreement? What mechanism is allowing the state to do that?
It's in the state child welfare law, so it's welfare and institutions code, and if you're writing it down, it's 366.24.
Of the California code?
That's the California code, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to send you our law, and maybe you can give us an opinion as to whether you, I mean, I know you probably don't know much about Oklahoma. Well, you may know everything about Oklahoma law. I shouldn't be assumption. But
nope.
Anyway, we're trying to explore what might be required with Oklahoma in order to undertake this. Do you know of any Oklahoma tribes that are doing tribal customary adoption?
No, I don't. I know there are other Oklahoma tribes that have utilized California's tribal customary adoption, or at least that we have answered some questions on behalf of. But I also wanted to mention that the state of Oregon is working with their tribes to do the same thing. So it might be worth reaching out to, I can't remember her name, I want to say it's Nacha, who's the tribal advisor with Oregon, who was spearheading the work group there.
Okay. If you can figure out her contact and get it to us, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. Happy to do that.
Delia, thank you so much for your time. Again, I apologize that it took us a while to get together, but I'll be in touch. How's that?
All right. Sounds good. Oh, you know, I wanted to mention one of the ICWA bills that we're running this legislative season is about removing the cost, you know, the overall barriers for out-of-state tribal attorneys to appear through the Pro Hoc Vitae process, right, without associating local counsel and waiving the $500 fee. So, Shannon, if you wouldn't mind, I'll send you that, and if the tribe would be interested in supporting that by just sending in a letter, that could be very helpful and one step toward making sure that tribes that are not in California but have kids here have an opportunity to truly be heard as parties to their cases.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right, sounds good. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Those are the only people that I have for today. I also had reached out to Blake Ackerson, who's he was working for California Indian Legal Services, but I haven't heard back from him yet. So I have some more people that we can hear from. I just look for next steps to continue to work on the bill and how the committee wants to move forward.
Congressman Goodfox.
I have a question. So hearing from Judge that there's kind of funnels through social services, and then hearing from our social services, because what may work for them may not work for us. I mean, that's just, we asked, how does this work for you? And he told us. Hearing from our social services, and she said, no, I don't think that's a good idea. How do we move forward? Like, okay, so it works for them. We have our social services director saying that's not going to work for us. But we also don't have, chief here either, or director of operations. So if we say, well, no, we're going to have our social services, but we are giving them more work to do, and I don't know that the director of operations would be okay with, like, I don't know. How do you see that going forward?
I see that we talk to the director of social services, who comes up with a solution to how to make this work for our Osage people who are interested in it. And if we have to see. We didn't see yesterday the cost, but I do want to know what the costs are. Of course. I think we need to talk about 4E. I've wondered why we weren't doing 4E, and maybe there's a good answer, but it seems like other tribes are doing 4E.
Well, hold on. So you said we don't.
I studied 4E for 5 years and talked with NICWA, Children's Bureau, everybody. Because of the number of children that we have in foster care through our tribal court, that's where the advantage would be, is when you have, 100 kids in the custody of your tribe, it's very beneficial to go the direct 4E route. But when you have less than 20 children in your tribal court, and you're having to engage your social services department, your accounting department, your attorney general, there's a lot of things that it costs to do, it's not worth it. We have a tribal state agreement. We're getting pass-through dollars from the state of Oklahoma. But our foster parents are being paid, our adopted parents are being paid, their court costs are being paid, the kids all have Medicare. So we have the best of the best right now, based on our tribal population, the number of children in the custody of the nation, and all that. David Simmons, if you're familiar with the National Indian Child Welfare Association, he and I have had a number of conversations, and he says, Lee, it's not in the best interest of the Osage Nation to do this. And that was probably 3 or 4 years ago. I have looked at other methods where we could take part of the money from the state, but because the majority of our caseload is out of state, we would have to have an agreement with every state that our children are in. We were in 26 states last year, and it would take...
Man, y'all got around.
It would take years to get agreements in every state like that. So it's, what we have is optimal, I can assure you. As far as the cost to set up a separate department and the reason for it, Anita Finday, who you've told me numerous times, she is the one who told me exactly what I'm telling you. Do not run this through your social services department. It is not allowed.
Yeah, we need
You're putting your money at risk. That's why White Earth Ojibwe set up a separate department. If you looked up that thing I told you about the other day online, I'll let you have it. It'll tell you they have a separate department.
Right, I know.
And you must. We would have to run it through there, because we get a substantial amount of funding through self-governance for our department. And it makes no sense to try another direction where it's going to cost the tribe whatever self-governance is giving us. Another $300,000 or $400,000. That you would have to appropriate to us when we can go as we are. It just doesn't, it makes no sense. Anita, the White Earth Ojibwe, I can't remember what she said their tribal population was, but she and I agreed that it would cost the Osage Nation about the same as it would for the White Earth Ojibwe for us to set up a department or program
to administer tribal customary adoption.
What if you only had one person, though? What if you only had one contractor?
You still got to have office space, supplies, travel. They're going to have to do all of the work. But, you know, there won't be any work because in 23 years, we have had one request for a tribal customary adoption. In 23 years, I can tell you that for a fact. So if they sit and wait for 23 years to do the next one, then, you know, is it worth putting that kind of money into it?
Well, beyond the money, let's just say we could solve the money issue, okay? Let's say over here we solve the money issue. Then my question is, why don't we look to you to come up with, I mean, I wrote down the amendments that you proposed from the draft, and so I have those amendments. Was there anything else except for that? I mean, I'm trying to find solutions to this because we have tribal members that are interested in us adopting this, and my answer doesn't want to be...
You have a tribal family that was interested in doing it. I know that. But aside from that, in the hundreds of cases that we manage, that's the only one that there is, currently or in the last 23 years.
Well, I guess I'm just asking. Can we look to you to provide us some solutions for how to adopt some sort of tribal customary adoption law, including, as I think I heard them talk about, maybe the solution is to, in the state court system, to allow the tribe to have input in the order.
We already do.
Well, then why?
Now we already are they place continuing? Our children with Osages. They listen to our recommendations. We provide them the adoptive families who are Osage in across the nation from coast to coast. We have different Osage adoptive families that we're able to place our children in when it comes to that. And so what we have right now, it works. We are not having issues with it at all. And I couldn't do this on my own. This would take a team. I believe I've said that before. It would require a task force, actually, to give you that solution.
Okay.
Councilwoman Goodfox, do you have your hand up?
Yes. I don't know if I missed your answer of why it, when you talked about it going through social services, I think you said at one point, and it was a side conversation that we were having, you said it would be dangerous. So I don't understand why.
Oh, because,
sorry.
25 CFR 20.512, it says that the Bureau, and which those codes apply to the Bureau, and you understand that under self-governance, we've taken over those functions. And so the code applies to the tribe the same as it applies to the Bureau. The Bureau cannot be or shall not be an adoption agency. What you're talking about is an adoption agency where people can give up their babies, or maybe, you know, someone says, I can't do this, my sister's going to do it for me and wants to do an adoption. There was no child abuse or neglect. It doesn't involve social services, but they can petition the court to do an adoption. They can do it that way.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ms. Collins, and that's why the Wild Earth Ojibwe tribe opened up this, because of the jeopardizing their funds, self-governance funds through that code, the CFR. Now, they've done theirs over a period of time. How many of these customary adoptions are they now doing per year?
They have done about 300 since in about 10 years. So maybe, I don't know. Anita gave me the number that they had done 300 of those, and I can't remember how many years it took.
That's a big number.
They are in the state of Minnesota, and there's a number of tribes in the state of Minnesota. So they're allowing other tribes to utilize their services and their court to do this. And they're providing the home studies, the supervised visitation, the this and the that.
Is that a grant? Do you know if that's a grant that they got?
No, it is not a grant. It's tribally funded, she told me. Tribal dollars.
She is one of my first people to follow
up. How do they qualify other tribes come to the White Earth?
MOU.
Yes, you can do an MOU.
Could we do an MOU?
With who?
Paw.
Just a minute. Anka. Councilman Whitehorn, we have something.
Well, yeah, I was still trying to get clarity on adoption agency versus our social services department. So where I'm getting confused is I thought the adoption was a function of the courts.
As it is right now, yes.
So I'm trying to, just because I don't know, I'm trying to figure out how adoption would become a function of the social services department should we have customary tribal adoption. I'm trying to figure out, because I don't get.
You'd have to do home studies.
Wouldn't that be by court order, though?
Doesn't matter. Someone's got to do it.
Do you not do those currently?
We do. But we wouldn't be allowed to do it for this. This is different.
Okay, that helps. That's all I needed right there. Okay. It clicked with me.
And you heard what he said, $10,000 a piece. It was either Delia or Judge Maynard. I can't remember. You know,
well, we could get, I mean, you could hire, you could contract those services out. That's what the state court does sometimes. You just contract the home study out.
We could contract our own social services department if they were paid separate funds other than federal funds to do so.
No, because we're paid federal funds.
Right.
We couldn't do it. We would be risking our 638 funding. You would have to find private social workers
to do
which
that.
There are in Save Oklahoma, but I would think you would prefer Osages doing those.
Yes, there's one.
Okay.
So we could craft it. I mean, just like we're giving money to the court now, we'll be giving money to the court now for public defenders under new laws. We could certainly give money to the court. We give them money for guardian ad litem. We give them money. So if there's not that many a year, if there's one a year, you know how that funding works. We could fund one a year, two a year. I mean, if it happened. And if not, their money's for contract anyway. So we just add home studies in there. I mean, what I hear is social services is very nervous about being involved in this from the standpoint of funding. So, I mean, we just don't put them into the formula.
We have a question here. We have is the committee finished? Any more questions from the committee? We have one of our Mr. Ashton come up, please. Please limit your.
Just real quick, then. First of all, I want to thank everybody for the efforts they're putting in, members of Congress here, for this tribal customer adoption. A couple of things, regardless if it's one Osage child. One Osage child is still too important to be left behind by our nation. That's my opinion. The other thing, too, is there are, just thinking out loud, the state of California allows for tribal customary adoptions. They also allow, as the person on the phone said, they allow the nation itself to direct whoever's going to handle those services or to handle the execution of that. So, thinking out loud, a first draft of the law could narrow it down to the states that right now allow you to do that. There are a large number of Osage citizens that live in the state of California that benefit from this. And as the person on the phone mentioned already, the state of Oregon allows for tribal customary adoptions. I know, of course, they mentioned the state of Minnesota allows for tribal customary adoptions. Well, what I'm saying is, if we can't take a leap right now and covering everybody everywhere, why don't we take a step? Take a step, focus on the state of California, and then maybe expand it to the state of Oregon that allows for that, and then learn from that and move forward. That's just, like I said, me thinking out loud regarding something that will be beneficial to our people. Thank you.
Thank you. We're about at the end of our time. We have some amendments here from Congresswoman Edwards. How do you want to move?
Will you just hold on to those, and the next time we get together, I'll make, well.
Well, we meet tomorrow. We're working tomorrow.
Emergency?
I don't. I'll say this. In my opinion, WASHCOM is continuing to work on this. And that doesn't mean with an eye towards not getting it passed. It means an eye towards getting it passed and be prepared to implement it. Doesn't mean pass it now and hope for the best. That would be my thought process. But this body did some different things the last couple of days, which I was quite surprised about. So if the body wants to take what we did yesterday and continue it, then I'm fine with that too. We can pass it now and work on it later. So either way.
Well, let's, after hearing that, committee, have, would anybody have any input on that remark? Speaker?
It's time for the next meeting. So, sounds like it would be tabled, so I move to for the postpone the work. Postpone ONCA 17-120.
Do we have a motion?
The chair.
Motion to postpone? Is there a second?
One second.
Second made by Congressman Supernaw. Any discussion? Seeing none, motion carries. This is postponed.
Yes.
Let's have a vote. All in favor?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes? Okay.
Okay,
this is
to
postponed
adjourn.
Till motion to adjourn. We are adjourned. Thank you, committee. We learned a lot today. We heard from a lot of other people. And it needs a little more work.